Whoa, what a speech by Prime Minister Netanyahu. But before we get to that, some women who met Jesus in the Gospels.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We had some really unexpected things happened in the city of Charlotte, North Carolina last night that will be of interest to all of you. I'll brief you on that a little later in the broadcast. This morning, Prime Minister Netanyahu addressed joint houses of Congress, rousing standing ovation after rousing standing ovation as he laid out clearly the issue with militant Islam, explaining that when it comes to Iran and ISIS, they are competing for the leadership role in the world of militant Islam. The prime minister said when it comes to Iran and ISIS, just because Iran is fighting against ISIS, they're still the enemy. He said, in this case, the enemy of your enemy is still your enemy. We'll talk to you about that in a little while. 866-34-TRUTH, always the number to call. Michael Brown, delighted and blessed to have this time with you. A few minutes, we're going to be joined by some very special guests telling you about a really amazing new book that they co-authored that's going to give you a glimpse of Jesus that you probably never saw before. And I was thrilled to talk to one of the authors about this privately, and that's why I said, well, let's get you on the air to tell our listeners about this book. So a whole lot coming your way. Remember, although you may be getting me 15 minutes while driving in your car, 10 minutes in between appointments, and then catch up later, or you may have me a whole hour on, we're on for 2 hours, which means later in the day, you can just go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and you can just click on latest broadcast and catch the entire broadcast, or subscribe by podcast and get it for free if you miss any part of it. Because I'll be giving a major Charlotte update in the second hour. And if you're listening in the city of Charlotte, one of our great cities on the air here, by all means, I do want to talk to you, especially if you differ with my perspective. I'd love to take some calls. That'll be a little bit later, 866-34-TRUTH. First, by popular demand, we are holding over the video offer from last week, The Achilles Heels of Evolution. And Joey, I want you to grab clip number 4. I want you to hear this. This is an excerpt from the DVD that we are offering again this week with two complete interviews from some of the scientists on the debate, so on the video. So about 3 hours of material overall. Let's listen to this clip. Number 4, please.
The general theory of evolution says that all living things came from a single cell, and that cell came from something like a primordial soup. And for me as a chemist, the hardest problem for evolution is the origin of first life from non-living chemicals, and this is commonly called chemical evolution.
Most people have heard of the Miller-Urey experiment, and it's in most textbooks still today. They wanted to see if organic molecules could come from inorganic precursors, so they took some simple chemicals and they ran them through a spark chamber, and most of the products they got really amounted to nothing more than a brown tar, because random chemical reactions produced random molecules. And yeah, they found a few amino acids, but in a mixture of left and right-handed forms. But what they didn't find are certain specific amino acids that are critical for life. They didn't find nucleotides. They didn't find any large biomolecules.
Any chemist trying to do that would not have water in the reaction, because water tends to drive the reaction in the opposite direction towards the little molecules, and yet the primordial soup would inevitably have loads of water in it. So it's the last place any real chemist would try to make proteins or DNA.
Explaining with great graphics and very lucid, clear presentations, top scholars, scientist explaining why Darwinian evolution is fatally flawed. So you can get the DVD along with the two CDs of the interviews with some of the very scholars you just heard there. Only $25 postage paid. Call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or order right from the website, askdrbrown.org.
want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is a very unique book, The Day I Met Jesus, co-authored by Frank Viola. Frank's a personal friend, best-selling author, pointed many to a deeper relationship with Jesus. Mary DeMuth, former church planter in France, author of more than 16 nonfiction and fiction books, and through God's grace and help has overcome a difficult childhood full of neglect, abuse, and familial dysfunction to become a living example of what it means to live uncaged. That gets my attention for sure. Anything Frank writes gets my attention. The book tells you about five women in the scriptures and when they met Jesus. So I'm delighted to bring both Frank and Mary onto the Line of Fire. Greetings. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to be on, Michael.
Great to be here.
Well, you know, I've done many interviews with authors, but I don't know that I've done interviews with two at the same time who co-authored a book. Who came up with the idea for this book first? What's the genesis of it?
I'll let Frank take that.
Yeah. Right. Several years ago, I had it in my mind to do something a little different with the Gospels, to bring the characters to life, but more importantly, to reveal Christ. And that was to tell the story of various people in the Gospels through their own eyes, through their own lips, to get into their world and have them do a sort of an autobiographical narrative of what was really happening. And all of that would be based on first century history, would be based on a reading of the Gospels in the original, and then also to follow that up with a nonfiction practical application teaching section that would make, you know, very practical the lessons that we learn from those autobiographical depictions of various people in the Gospel. And so I had a series of books in mind. God's Favorite Place was one of them, where Lazarus told the story from his own eyes, his own experience about Jesus in the little village of Bethany. And then this one here is a diary, basically, of five women in the Gospels telling the story of the day they met Jesus and the amazing things that happened as a result.
Right. And your last book, Through the Eyes of Lazarus, that was a moving book. We had you on the air to talk about that. But obviously, if you're going to bring the perspective of five women, as a man, you could use a little help. So Mary, how is it that you as a woman might read the Gospels differently than a man might read them? What perspective might you see things through that I might miss?
Well, I think women have this crazy life of busyness and looking around and having 10,000 thoughts in their head that don't always connect together. At least that's how my day is going today. And so being able to read the Bible and just putting myself into the footsteps and into the sandals of these amazing women and to realize that they are just like me. They have struggles. They are concerned for their families. They are processing grief. And because of that, it was such a great and beautiful challenge to realize that the Bible is real, of course, and that these are real, actual stories of living, breathing women whose lives were radically changed when they intersected with Jesus Christ.
Mm. And Frank, let's when we had lunch together in Florida a couple months back, you kind of took me through a narrative. And I remember we were talking about just different people when they met Jesus the first time and how he revealed himself and things like that. And there were some things I never thought of. Paint a picture here. Obviously, there's too much to get into in one interview. People need to get the book, The Day I Met Jesus. And Frank, you can tell folks how to get it in a moment as well, the best way to order it. But give me a sample. Just give us a taste of one of these women and what happened.
Let me start out with kind of how we open the book up to show why this is so important. And this book, even though it's about women, Michael, and it focuses on these five women, it's also a book for men. In fact, a lot of the responses from early readers have been that men are weeping through the book. But in Luke 24, we have this story where Jesus has just been crucified, and it's Sunday evening, A.D. 30. You've got two people walking from Jerusalem to the town of Emmaus. Now, scripturally, when we look carefully and we point this out in the book, this is a husband and a wife. And we know their names. It's Cleopas and his wife Mary. And they are perplexed and saddened because their entire hope in this person, Jesus of Nazareth, to be the Messiah, has been dashed asunder. As they're walking, a stranger comes up to them, a mysterious stranger, and enters into the conversation, and they tell him, yes, we had hopes in this man, but it's all over. This stranger begins to open up the Old Testament story in a way they'd never heard. And he tells the story differently. He transforms it from one-dimensional monosound, black and white, to high-definition 3D surround sound. And as he's doing that, they invite him to eat with them. He reaches for the bread at the table, and immediately their eyes are opened. And when he was speaking to them, their hearts burned within them because they heard the story fresh and new, like they'd never heard before. Their eyes opened because as he reached over to the bread, they caught a glimpse of his wrists, and they saw the wounds. And Luke says their eyes were opened, and they knew. And that sentence comes right out of Genesis 3, when another couple ate a different kind of fruit, and their eyes were opened, and they knew. I'm speaking of Adam and Eve.
Yep.
And the point there is that we live in a day, Michael, where we've heard the worn-out stories, the well-worn stories. Jesus becomes flat. The figures become flat. We need to tell the story differently. Not deviating from the original narrative, but to tell it new and fresh. And that's exactly what we do for all five of these women in this book. That kind of sets up the reason for the book and where we're going with it.
Yeah, and even what you point out in the narrative in Luke 24, I think already those are things that many of us never thought about, never read the text in that light. Again, you're not changing the text. You're just telling it in vivid terms and stepping back and looking for insights. Frank, if folks want to get the book, what's the best way to order it?
They can go to parable.com online. They will see a big banner at the very top for The Day I Met Jesus. And Michael, it's 50% off regular price this week. And not only that, but if they buy the book from parable.com this week, they will receive exclusive bonuses from both Mary and I. We want to encourage people to buy it from Parable. They're a Christian bookstore. They're solid people. We love the team there, so we want to get behind them and support them. And the rate is better than Amazon.
Excellent. Yeah, plus all the special resources that are free resources coming with it. Mary, those of us who come from non-Catholic backgrounds may have reacted against the veneration of Mary or the exaltation of Mary or Mary being perceived as in competition with Jesus. And perhaps we underestimate the role of women in the New Testament. How important are women in the ministry of Jesus and the life of Jesus from your perspective?
They're very important. And it's fun to watch throughout all the stories, especially, you know, women who see him after he is resurrected and the women who were at the cross and did not abandon Jesus. So he treated them as he dignified them and listened to them and crossed cultural barriers to elevate them and messed with everyone's perceptions and made the disciples mad and certainly made Pharisees mad in the way in which he interacted with them. So very important, and for all of us who may struggle, whether we feel marginalized as women or we are maybe don't have economic power or whatever it is that we may struggle with today, it is really exciting and good to know that Jesus notices the people on the fringes of society, and he pulls them into the light, and then in that moment of interaction changes them forever.
Yeah, and reaching out to the marginalized, we forget how marginalized women were. So even if we recognize the importance of their ministry, we forget how marginalized caste that they were. So, Mary, this is a large question, but if Jesus was in the Muslim world, which, of course, he's working behind the scenes, and the gospel was spreading radically in the Muslim world, do you think it would bring about a change of the status of Muslim women in radical Islamic countries?
Well, it would have to, because of the way that Jesus dignified women and how, you know, the scripture says there's neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female. So there would have to be an elevation of status and an equality between the sexes, and an ability for women to just unmask themselves and be fully developed followers of Christ. And in that, and as we do that, then there is a freedom. And as I, you know, talk about in lots of places, just this uncagedness that comes when we are, and when we meet Jesus and we are met by him.
Mm. All right, listen, we come back. I want you to pursue that, Mary, what it means to be uncaged by Jesus as a woman. Oh, this is the opposite of the worldly women's lib. This is the Jesus lib. Then I'll ask Frank to give us one more vignette, the new book, The Day I Met Jesus. We'll tell you again how to order when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The book is published by Baker Books, The Day I Met Jesus, How Five Women in the Gospels Met Jesus, What It Looked Like Through Their Eyes, a book for both women and men. So go to parable.com. I just posted this on my Facebook page. Go to parable.com. When you get there, you can order the book, you get it half price, plus you get several free, as in free, ebooks by the authors Frank Viola and Mary DeMuth, and some other materials. I'm just looking here. This is amazing. What literally they're giving away when you get the book, and again, you're getting the book at half price. So, Mary, you talk about being uncaged as a woman. We know the worldly version, women's lib, which doesn't understand womanhood or God's purpose and destiny for women. But yet there's a real uncaging that takes place, especially when women are often the oppressed minorities or the oppressed outsiders in much of society, especially when it comes to ministry. So how does this work? What does it look like? What does it feel like when Jesus uncages a woman for his purposes?
Well, it's a pretty cool thing, that's for sure. And I think it's not just that he uncages you to serve, which I think is awesome and important, but he uncages you to live. So in my case, just some of the things that I've gone through in my own life, sexual abuse and loss of divorces by parents, death of a parent, all those things, I am not shackled to the power of all those things that happened to me. Because of meeting Jesus when I was 15, and of course this book is all about the day people meet Jesus, he has done so much great and amazing healing in my heart that some people who know me have no idea that those things happened to me. And that's the power of God's redemption in a woman's heart. He can heal the past and give you the gumption and the holy tenacity to really dig in and change the landscape of the kingdom of God forever.
Yeah, and when people don't realize the brokenness that was there because there's so much wholeness, that's what Jesus does. Frank, give us one more vignette, just a sampling to whet our appetite of one of the five women whose story you tell in the book.
Well, the Samaritan woman, interestingly enough, the ancient Christians had her name. It was Photini. And you know, there were three major scandals that punctuated the story, and of course, we tell it through her own eyes. And we had Craig Keener, a mutual friend of ours, Michael, who's a renowned New Testament scholar. He was our historical advisor to make sure that every story was faithful to first century history in the Gospels. But in that story, you know, Jesus Christ came across and actually, you know, fell into, I would say, three major scandals, and he didn't really care. He just blew the lid off of each of them. But one was that Jewish people hated Samaritans, in that day. They viewed them as outcasts, half-breeds. Yep. You know, there was a famous saying, the Gentiles, a first-century Jewish common saying, the daughters of the Samaritans are menstruants from the cradle. In other words, they're born unclean. So for Jesus to be talking to a Samaritan, period, was instant scandal. Secondly, Jews were not to eat with Samaritans. And here he's asking her for a drink from her cup.
Yep.
And then thirdly, Jewish men were not allowed to speak to women alone in public locations, and which was a strongly held taboo. And that's why the disciples were shocked when they found him talking to a woman. Well, here, not only does Jesus break all these taboos by talking to this Samaritan woman in public, but she is a multi-divorcee, and she's living in sin. And yet, the longest recorded conversation Jesus Christ ever has with anyone is with this woman.
Incredible.
And he shares with her some of the most amazing things. He even beyond what he told the male disciples, he shares the secrets of the kingdom of God and worship and spirit and truth and the tale of two mountains to this woman. And it is just earth-shaking. The fact that he just goes against all of these ironclad, oppressive traditions involving women, he, in effect, was the champion of women and all who were oppressed. And the very first eyes to see the resurrected Christ were the eyes of a woman. So we bring all this out in these stories. And I tell you, you know, as Mary wove these stories together and brought them to life, I was in tears reading it, you know. And it's just a powerful, powerful look, bringing, you know, these old familiar stories into 3D high definition, and our goal is to see, to show people the Christ who lives today, but who lived then, and he's the same today, yesterday, and forever.
Yeah, and Frank, no hype, and not just saying this as a friend, I find this so compelling. I find these narratives so compelling, and opening up things that, hey, I've known in my head, or I missed, but come alive in such a real way. So friends, go to parable.com. You get the paperback book for half price. So it's inexpensive to start. You get it for half price. But then you get 1, 2, 3 ebooks for free with it. And it's kind of crazy offer here. And then other audio messages. But it's all serious. So go to parable.com to order. Mary, we've just got 1 minute. But what is your hope for readers of this book? What do you want to see happen to them when they read this?
I want to see them begin to approach the Bible differently, in that as they read these stories, that it, as Frank kind of mentioned, this high definition of technicolor view of these stories will help them to imagine the fact that other stories are just as vital and just as amazing, that we can relate to these people. And seeing Jesus for the very first time is such a cool thing, and to see it through these eyes is a way that we also can reimagine Jesus. So I'm hoping for a new view.
Yeah, and you know what strikes me? Many of us, when we were first saved, our first love, reading the Bible the first time, it was wow, incredible, amazing. And we love the Lord years later, but we get familiar with things. This is one of those books that gets you back to the wow, amazing, incredible, and just causes you to want to tell everyone about Jesus. So Frank and Mary, thanks for writing the book, sending it to me, and thanks for being on the air today.
Thanks so much, Michael.
God bless you. Again, the book, The Day I Met Jesus, go to parable.com. The reason we're not offering it is because you can get a much, much, much better deal by going here and getting all the free ebooks that come along with it. So take advantage of that and be blessed. And let me encourage you also that we just have this week, we've extended this through March 5th, the special DVD, The Achilles Heels of Evolution. Boy, it's such an eye-opener, such a faith builder. And then two full interviews, about 90 minutes plus of interviews with two creation scientists, young earth creation scientists we had on the air last week with us, Dr. Jonathan Sarfati and Dr. Robert Carter. So the DVD plus the two CDs, only $25 postage paid. It's over 3 hours of material, DVD and CD. And just a great tool. We got such a great response, especially as the week was ending. We thought we got to extend this one more week. So call or order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Boy, listening to the Prime Minister today, I was proud to be Jewish and proud to be part of the greater Israel.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Israel's neighbors, Iran's neighbors, know that Iran will become even more aggressive and sponsor even more terrorism when its economy is unshackled and it's been given a clear path to the bomb. And many of these neighbors say they'll respond by racing to get nuclear weapons of their own. So this deal won't change Iran for the better. It will only change the Middle East for the worse. A deal that's supposed to prevent nuclear proliferation would instead spark a nuclear arms race in the most dangerous part of the planet.
Very strong word from Prime Minister Netanyahu to the Joint Houses of Congress today. What was it? 55 Democrats did not come to the event. Shame on them. And sadly, and this is being protested by black pastors in America, the Black Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus, said that they would not attend the event. What a loss for them. Thank God for these prominent black pastors who are saying we stand with Israel and rebuking members of the Congressional Black Caucus for saying, both House and Senate Democrats, that they would not attend Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech. Yes, let him call out our president in America and say you're making a mistake with Iran. These are people's lives, Israel's national existence. I'm not talking about God is unable to protect Israel. I'm talking about simple security. You're talking about the existence of a nation. You're talking about a militant Islamic nation that has helped export militant Islam around the world. Look at where militant Islam was worldwide before 1979 and the rise of the Iranian Revolution under Ayatollah Khomeini. Look at that and look at where it is today. Yes, there was some that was existing that came out of Haj Amin al-Husseini and the Palestinian, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who was a friend of Hitler and who wanted to see the Jews exterminated and who led uprising against Palestinian Jews in the 1930s. So yes, you had groups like the Muslim Brotherhood come out of that, and out of those groups like Hamas. But so much of world terror today comes out of the Iranian Islamic Radical Revolution of the late 1970s. Now you want to put nuclear bombs in their hands or slow down their process of getting them rather than stopping them from getting them? And they've called for the annihilation of Israel? Yes, I'm glad that Prime Minister Netanyahu spoke plainly before Congress. I'm glad he was invited. Someone pointed out to me that just like in the book of Esther, because remember, Purim starts tomorrow, okay? And this is when Persia, under Haman, wanted to wipe out the Jews. So Persia, Iran, same place, wanted to wipe out the Jews 2,500 years ago. Here it happens once again. And someone pointed out that Queen Esther had to violate protocol because she was not invited by the king. She had to violate protocol in order to be to go and address him and to plead for her people. Well, the same way Prime Minister Netanyahu had to violate protocol because he was invited by Speaker of the House John Boehner. President Obama did not want him to come. In fact, has been actively speaking against his visit. And if you read it the way I read it, siding with Iran rather than with Israel in terms of nuclear proliferation and where they are on this side of the deal. Yes, I'm glad he came. I'm glad he spoke. And I'm glad that he received the standing ovations that he did. And I'm glad all of America is now able to hear his warnings. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Did you see the speech today? Did you hear the speech today by Prime Minister Netanyahu? Look, over and over he spoke about militant Islam. He laid out the goals of militant Islam. He spoke of the violence done by militant Islam. Much of the terror around the world is sponsored by Iran, a leader in militant Islam. And again, when Prime Minister Netanyahu spoke about ISIS and Iran, he said the fact that Iran is fighting ISIS does not make Iran our friend. He said, in this case, the enemy of our enemy is our enemy. And he also said that they are vying for supremacy in the world of militant Islam. And then, of course, it's Sunni versus Shiite, and that further inflames the battle. Did you watch the speech? If so, what did you think? Are you one who felt it was out of place for him to come and speak to Congress and say that the deal that America was making with Iran was a bad deal? Or is it the uniqueness of America's relationship with Israel that allowed for that to happen? Let me play a couple of clips for those who did not hear the speech. I didn't hear all of it myself. I was doing other things and then realized the speech was on. I was just moved by what I did hear. Yes, I was partial. Correct. I was partial. Absolutely. I wanted to hear what he had to say. I was glad he was addressing Congress. But for sure, as I listened, just based on the facts that I know, what he said was what needed to be said. A quick word, if you're listening to me in Greater Charlotte, North Carolina, and you want to discuss what happened last night with the vote on what was called the non-discrimination bill, which I believe actually was a discrimination bill, if you are happy with the vote that took place, striking the bill down, if you feel it was a big mistake to strike the bill down, if you identify as LGBT or are an ally, a straight ally of the LGBT community, next hour, so Eastern Standard Time, 3 to 4, the phone lines will be wide open. If you differ with me, if you heard me speak yesterday and differ with me, if you feel that there's a perspective that we're missing, if you're just upset and want to vent, if you want to challenge my perspective, the phone lines will be open, but I won't be taking those calls now. You can get on now and hold, that's fine. But I won't be getting to that subject until we get to the top of the hour, just to let you know. And those of you who won't get that second hour in your city, you can catch it online at askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, right where it says listen live on the banner. Or after the show, a couple hours after the show, it'll be archived already. Or if you subscribe by podcast, you get it for free. More from the Prime Minister of Israel. We'll go to clip number 11. This is just from this morning addressing the joint houses of Congress.
For those who believe that Iran threatens a Jewish state, but not the Jewish people, listen to Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, Iran's chief terrorist proxy. He said, if all the Jews gather in Israel, it will save us the trouble of chasing them down around the world. But Iran's regime is not merely a Jewish problem, any more than the Nazi regime was merely a Jewish problem. The 6 million Jews murdered by the Nazis were but a fraction of the 60 million people killed in World War II. So too, Iran's regime poses a grave threat, not only to Israel, but also to the peace of the entire world.
Where did we get the idea that somehow we could work out a good agreement with Iran? And the sanctions, look, you hate the fact that the people are suffering because of the decisions of the government. You hate the fact that in many ways it's an oppressive regime to the people. You hate the fact that the sanctions are economically hurting everyone, but better that than to bomb them. I mean, talking about the nation as a whole and to kill innocent people. Rather, if you can put sufficient pressure on the nation to do the right thing, then rather than be toppled by people who are not happy because the economy is in such bad shape, then perhaps they have to compromise, even though they do not want to. And even if Iran wants to use nuclear means of energy in a non-combative way, as well as have access to nuclear weapons, you're not going to do the one because we don't trust you with the other. Ask yourself a question. Can militant Islam be trusted with nuclear weapons? Is that a hard question to answer? Is it really? 866-34-TRUTH. Clip number 12, Joey, as we continue to listen to Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Iran not only defies inspectors, it also plays a pretty good game of hide and cheat with them. The UN's nuclear watchdog agency, the IAEA, said again yesterday that Iran still refuses to come clean about its military nuclear program. Iran was also caught twice, not once, twice, operating secret nuclear facilities in Natanz and Qom, facilities that inspectors didn't even know existed. Right now, Iran could be hiding nuclear facilities that we don't know about, the U.S. and Israel. As the former head of inspections for the IAEA said in 2013, he said, if there's no undeclared installation today in Iran, it'll be the first time in 20 years that it doesn't have one. Iran has proven time and again that it cannot be trusted.
Sad, but true. Sad, but true. Look, when annual Jerusalem Day is held in Tehran, and you have hundreds of thousands of Iranians, if not millions of Iranians, you have them burning Israeli flags and burning American flags and chanting death to Israel, death to America. That's what we are dealing with, inflamed by the militant Islamic leadership. That's what we are dealing with, friends. It's not to demonize every Iranian. In fact, my heart really beats for the Iranian people because many live under the oppression of radical Islam and many want freedom from it, and Christians in Iran are heavily persecuted. I mentioned on the air yesterday, after speaking in Franklin, Tennessee at Grace Chapel Sunday morning on understanding radical Islam, an Iranian man came up to me, a young man who came to Jesus in 2010, a former devout Muslim. And he wanted me to know that everything I said about radical Islam and Islam in general was accurate, and he was beaming. Boy, was he beaming. I remember an Iranian Christian came to my home many years ago, some sales service call, I forget what it was, but he was a stranger to me. We started talking, found out that he was a believer, and he said to me, we're talking about anti-Semitism, I don't know how it came up, he said, no true Christian can hate the Jews. A true Christian loves the Jews. Here's an Iranian man who grew up in an environment that would have been very hostile to Israel, and yet the love of God was put in his heart. I feel bad for the Iranian people. This is not hostility towards them. It's recognition of the dangers of radical Islam and recognition of the fact that Tehran, Iran, the Iranian leadership there is radical, is militant, and does stand against many of the things we stand for and does stand against the modern state of Israel and has been involved in acts of terror against Jews in other parts of the world in years past. Sad, but true. Sad, but true. I want to play another clip for you when we come back. But first, Star Parker. She is a journalist, and she leads what's called CURE, which is an urban renewal movement. She is an African-American woman. She did a press conference together with prominent U.S. black pastors denouncing the Congressional Black Caucus's decision to boycott Israel. And Again, it's a shame that so many Democrats boycotted the event. It is shameful. It is a shame that the Congressional Black Caucus boycotted the Prime Minister's speech. And it is a credit to Black America that Black pastors stood up and said, as Star Parker said, "We want the Israeli Prime Minister to know that he is welcomed here by the Black Christian community." And she said the Black Caucus is out of step with Black Christians by not welcoming this visitor bringing the gospel of freedom from abroad. They should recognize that welcoming Mr. Netanyahu means, in the words of Dr. King, standing up for what is best in the American dream and for the most sacred values of our Judeo-Christian heritage. Well said.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, one more clip. I guess the one that we didn't play so far looks like clip number 14, Prime Minister Netanyahu, Michael Brown, welcoming you back to The Line of Fire broadcast. So the last clip from the that we're excerpting from Prime Minister Netanyahu's amazing speech to Congress this morning, clip number 14.
"I've come here today to tell you we don't have to bet the security of the world on the hope that Iran will change for the better. We don't have to gamble with our future and with our children's future. We can insist that restrictions on Iran's nuclear program not be lifted for as long as Iran continues its aggression in the region and in the world."
One of many standing ovations he received, and ending with clearly saying that Israel does not stand alone, that America stands with Israel. Pastor Dexter T. D. Sanders, Black pastor, Rock Center for Transformation Orlando, Florida, said, "The thing to me that makes no sense is why the Congressional Black Caucus has teamed up with this current administration against Israel. And yes, I'm saying you have gone against Israel when you decide to protest the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, from coming and speaking on the behalf of the nation of Israel." He said the Congressional Black Caucus's actions are a slap in the face to the people of Israel. And not only that, it's a slap in the face to God. And not only that, it's also a slap in the face of all Bible-believing African-American people in this country. I agree wholeheartedly. Well said. Okay, a couple more excerpts here from the speech, and let me try to get to the end here. And as I'm looking at the transcript, it's applause, applause, applause as he gets into some parts of the speech, and he begins to say, "Okay, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to do with regard to Iran." He said, "I've come here today to tell you we don't have to bet the security of the world on the hope that Iran will change for the better. We don't have to gamble with our future, with our children's future." You just heard that played. He said, "We can insist that restrictions on Iran's nuclear program not be lifted for as long as Iran continues its aggression in the region and in the world." Yeah. Tell him you keep supporting terror. No deal. Is that so hard? Is that really so incomprehensible? Stop your acts of terror. Unless you do, we don't make a deal with you. He said, "Before lifting those restrictions, the world should demand that Iran do three things. First, stop its aggression against its neighbors in the Middle East. Second," then he's interrupted by applause, "stop supporting terrorism around the world." More applause. "Third, stop threatening to annihilate my country, Israel, the one and only Jewish state." Hey, is that too much to ask for? Oh, come on. Is this some outrageous demand? "Stop threatening to annihilate my country," the Prime Minister says. "And then we make a deal with you. And then we work with you in a constructive way." He said, "If the world powers are not prepared to insist that Iran change its behavior before a deal is signed, at the very least, they should insist that Iran change its behavior before a deal expires." If Iran changes its behavior, the restrictions would be lifted. If Iran doesn't change its behavior, the restrictions should not be lifted. We take the pressure off of you, not to make nuclear weapons, just take the pressure off of you so you're not under economic stranglehold in any way if you stop your acts of terror. If Iran wants to be treated like a normal country, let it act like a normal country. Is that too much to ask for? Let me go down a little bit further. Let's see. He says, no country has a greater stake. No country has a greater stake than Israel in a good deal that peacefully removes this threat. He says, ladies and gentlemen, history has placed us at a fateful crossroads. We must now choose between two paths. One path leads to a bad deal that would at best curtail Iran's nuclear ambitions for a while, but will inexorably lead to a nuclear-armed Iran whose unbridled aggression will inevitably lead to war. The second path, however difficult, could lead to a much better deal that would prevent a nuclear-armed Iran, a nuclearized Middle East, and the horrific consequences of both to all humanity. And he says at the end, we are no longer scattered among the nations, powerless to defend ourselves. We restored our sovereignty in our ancient home, and the soldiers who defend our home have boundless courage. For the first time in 100 generations, we, the Jewish people, can defend ourselves, and then constant applause. This is why, as Prime Minister of Israel, I can promise you one more thing. Even if Israel has to stand alone, Israel will stand. But I know that Israel does not stand alone. I know that America stands with Israel. I know that you stand with Israel. You stand with Israel because you know that the story of Israel is not only the story of the Jewish people, but of the human spirit that refuses again and again to succumb to history's horrors. And then he quotes the Hebrew in Joshua 1, Moses speaking to Israel, be strong and resolute, neither fear nor dread them. My friends, may Israel and America always stand together, strong and resolute. May we neither fear nor dread the challenges ahead. May we face the future with confidence, strength, and hope. May God bless the state of Israel, and may God bless the United States of America. And all the thank yous and the extended applause. Boy, I do not glory in President Obama being undermined or exposed in doing wrong. He is our president, and he is a human being. But this was deserved. His mistreatment of Prime Minister Netanyahu for so long, his actions towards him that were even humiliating personally towards the Prime Minister, and his working with Iran in a way that keeps Israel out and is in Israel's worst interest, is inexcusable. Thank God for the speech. I am with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and I hope America stands with Israel. And as a true friend, when Israel needs correction, we bring it. But as a true friend, we stand with Israel through thick and thin. Joey, grab from me clip number seven. Clip number seven, I want to play this real quick from the Evolution DVD, Refuting Darwinian Evolution.
You know, if you want to consider yourself part of the intellectual elite, you must be a Darwinist. It's that simple. It's like the fee you pay to get into the club. And so this is a very, very strong motivator. And there's a flip side to that, which is if you don't hold it, you will be ridiculed and treated as if you're really stupid and really ignorant. And so the fear of ridicule is just palpable on campuses. There are many, many scientists who actually realize that there are major problems with Darwinian theory, but they are silent because they know if they speak their doubts, they will get in trouble. They won't get grants, they won't get funding, they won't be politically correct, they won't have friends. All the stuff that makes for academic success goes away if you question Darwin.
Ooh, facts are being suppressed. True scientific discovery is being hindered. Find out more. This eye-opening DVD, we've extended it one more week. We've packaged it together with two great CD interviews from last week, two scientists that joined me on the air. And it's only $25 postage paid for all of those three resources. Call now 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 or go to AskDrBrown.org for more information. My bottom line today, America heard from the Prime Minister of Israel today words of truth, words that should call us to account. Let's stand with them. I heard it with my own ears. I'm not making it up. People told me last night, if I believe I'm a horse, I can use a stable. If I believe I'm black, even though I'm white, I'm black. The world is going mad.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown here. It was quite an extraordinary day in Charlotte, North Carolina, yesterday, last night. And I think it's of interest to all of you listening across the country. But if you're listening in Greater Charlotte on the Truth Radio Network, on our FM or AM stations, if you were at the meetings, the rally, the city council meeting last night, If you were one of those who wanted to see the bill passed that was called the non-discrimination bill regarding sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression, if you feel it was wrong that the city council voted against it in the oddest of ways, the truth be told, if you were one of those who spoke on behalf of the bill last night or one of the protesters I spoke to, as I invited you yesterday, you can call into the show, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you're there and you agree with my position, absolutely, I would love to hear from you. I was not pleased with everything that was said and done in the name of Jesus. I was not pleased with every attitude that came forward, but this was not something where everybody was from one group and all coached on what to say. These were lots of people speaking, and I understand what they were upset with, and I understand that not everyone knows how to represent Jesus the best way. Some of that grieved me for sure, and I understand that those who identify as LGBT say, well, you just hate us, and you don't look at us as fellow human beings, and you don't think that we deserve the same rights that you do. I understand your perspective, which is why I say, let's talk. Why I've sought to talk face-to-face on numerous occasions. Most of the time, the doors are closed, but we try anyway. We keep knocking anyway on the door and say, hey, let's talk. Let's dialogue in the midst of our differences. We live here side by side anyway. And my perspective is that this bill was actually a discrimination bill in the name of non-discrimination, that it was actually presented in a very one-sided way. When I got up to speak last night, I was scheduled to be speaker number 61 out of, I don't know, 115, 125 people. If you weren't there, so when I got up to speak, I was somewhere in the 50s. Instead of the normal 3 minutes per person, they limited it to two, which was a wise thing to do. And then I'll tell you what happened. I'll tell you why it's of importance, why it's of interest. But when I spoke, I called city attorney to account for a very biased, misleading, and deceptive presentation. There's a lot about what happened with this bill that's very bad, that's very wrong, that to me has everything to do with discrimination in the name of non-discrimination. And rather than helping people in a righteous way, those who struggle with gender identity issues, the council could have voted to turn the whole city upside down. I mean, things that make no sense at all. But perhaps what was the most wild of all was dialogue that I had with people. After I spoke, we don't have the audio for that during the rally. There was a rally attended by hundreds of people before the city council meeting. There were protesters there. They were in the great minority in the rally part. And I don't know overall in terms of those attending the city council meeting, how it divided between those for the bill or against the bill. I know the speakers, when I was there, the overwhelming majority were against the bill, but I wasn't there for all of that. I had to leave right after I spoke. But I, friends, stuff that is purely delusional is now being put forth as reality. It's nothing less than frightening. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Unfortunately, instead of acknowledging the gender of our trans brothers and sisters and our genderqueer siblings, the opposition believes that the privilege of cisgender bathrooms is worth denying others their health, their safety, and their dignity.
I'm an old guy. I remember when the South's restrooms were white or colored. Many whites feared the world would end if racial segregation was outlawed. It didn't. It won't end if you vote yes tonight. Charlotte's a progressive city, though sometimes it needs a little push.
Uh-huh. Those were some of the speakers at the city council meeting. Well over 100 different speakers who weighed in. I was one of them. We each had 2 minutes, weighed in as to why this bill was a good bill or a bad bill for the city of Charlotte. Similar bills have been passed in other parts of America, and we're getting horror stories of discrimination in these cities, one after another. State after state, city after city, horror stories of discrimination against men and women of faith, men and women of conservative moral values, the complete discarding of our freedoms of religion, speech, and conscience on a consistent basis across America. 866-34-TRUTH. As expected, the Charlotte Observer has penned an editorial blasting the city council and basically saying we're like an old southern city. We're not progressive. Oh, yeah. All progress is good, right? I guess so. I guess all progress is good progress. I guess that's the case, right? I guess that if the other big cities are doing it, we just got to do it, right? We don't want to be an old southern city, do we? I remember in 2012, when Charlotte voted, or 2013, when we voted for the marriage amendment defining marriage as a union of one man and one woman, and it was 61% to 39% voted for it, despite North Carolina having 3 Democrats for every 2 Republicans, despite the fact that the opposition to the bill outspent those on the side of the bill at least 2-1, our side still prevailed in that, the line of moral sanity and family sanity. I remember there were people very upset, very upset. Well, this is primitive, and this is the then governor of the state, Bev Perdue, said, "But we're like Mississippi." How terrible! Ugh. Of course, she apologized for that. God help us. Yeah, we're just not progressive enough. All progress, is it really progress? Is it really forward motion? Would it have been progress to make all the public bathrooms and locker rooms of Charlotte gender neutral? That would have been progress. That was part of the bill. And that's how the whole thing ended up getting defeated in a very, very shocking way. So here's what happened. There's a rally before the event. And after, well, there were protesters trying to disrupt things, and they were chanting, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, transphobia's got to go." So I asked them, "Okay, what's transphobia?" Some were just kept chanting, and one guy just bumping into me as he was, and I said, "Hey, man, you can't do that legally." So he'll just try to stop me. You know, he was going to be obnoxious. And anyway, I said to him, "You know, you're not helping your cause doing this. You don't make yourselves look good," but they're just ignoring me. Well, a couple of them I was able to talk to. A couple I was able to engage. One gal I thought was with us, and I just pat her on the shoulder. "Hey, come on, let's go talk to these people." And she said, "I am not with, don't you touch me." "Sorry, I thought you were with us." She goes, "Oh, I am very much not with you." There's a whole lot of hostility out there. A whole lot. And some of the things that were on our side I felt were inflammatory in a negative way. That don't help our cause. So that's our responsibility to present the gospel more plainly and clearly and to make our points more plain and clear. Yeah, we're going to offend people. Of course we're going to offend people. That's a given. That's an always. But let's not be offensive in the way that we do it. Well, one gal, I said, okay. She was saying, why if a man believes he's a woman, he can use a woman's bathroom. Remember, there's no test for this. There is no, okay, you have to have had sex change surgery X number of years. You have to completely look like the opposite sex. No test for it. And in fact, if you weren't dressed up like a woman on a given day, but you identified as a woman, you could still use the bathroom based on your gender perception. And certainly if I looked like a man, which I do, but I believed I was a woman to the core of my being and I wore a woman's outfit, I could use the ladies' room, according to the bill, if it had passed. So I asked this woman, what if I believe I'm a horse? Do I get to use the stable? She said yes. She said yes without flinching. She said yes. I said to her, do you have children? She said, no, I can't, but I teach 90 children. So someone, a young lady in our city, teaching, influencing 90 little children. I don't know what the setting is. I didn't ask for further details, nor am I trying to threaten or intimidate anyone. It's shocking to hear. She had no problem whatsoever. No problem whatsoever. She's got a 3-year-old kid she's responsible for. Let's say that was the case. There's a man, clearly a man, dressed as a woman, sounds like a man, goes into the ladies' room. No problem for the 3-year-old to be in there. Are you saying I think that man's going to be a sexual predator? No, if he's a man who genuinely believes he's a woman, I'm not assuming he's a sexual predator. However, I am assuming that sexual predators, as they have in other states, will use these laws because they're sicko people and they're trying to hurt people. And some of them just get turned on being in the same bathroom as someone of the opposite sex. One guy was recently caught filming women secretly. Was he transgender? No, he was a heterosexual predator, but he got in because of these laws. A little common sense, please. Just a little common sense. I asked another man. We had a friendly conversation. He was African American. I asked him, what if I believe I'm black? Does that make me black? He said, no, that's skin color. You're comparing two different things. I said, but what if to the core of my being, I believe I'm black? And he said, well, look, it's different with gender. I said, hang on. If someone is biologically male and chromosomally male and anatomically male, they're a man. He said, no, that's primitive. He called that primitive. I mean, we had a friendly discussion. We shook hands. I said, thank you for engaging me. So he was a thinking person. He was passionate about it. It's primitive to say that gender is determined. As one of the men said, it's not what's between your legs, it's what's between your ears. Well, what's between your ears can easily be changed by the moment. What's between your ears, meaning what you think and feel, can change by the moment. I watched a YouTube where a guy talked about how gender can change by the hour. I read another report. I'll get all into all of this in my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, which is due out later this year. That's about right. I quote at one college where they were interviewing kids, and these are thinking kids at a good college, and they're saying that they switch gender as to how they feel. They go to one thing and they say, hey, you know, call me he. They go to the next thing, call me she. And some of them are fighting back against the older generation, this oppressive gender binary. Friends, this is social madness. This is nothing less than social madness. Please call if you differ. Please enlighten us as you differ. Scott Bishop wrote the article favoring the ordinance in the Charlotte Observer. Sunday morning, David Benham wrote the editorial against it, and Scott Bishop wrote the editorial for it. My assistant was at the event last night and asked Scott Bishop if he'd like to appear on the radio with me. He thought about it and said no. But Scott, if you're listening, my phone lines are open, 866-34-TRUTH. I will not yell at you, and I know you won't yell at me. I want my listeners to understand why you think the bill was a right bill. I want them to understand why I think it was a wrong bill. You say, okay, but the bathroom part, that got shut down. At the end, council members said, okay, we won't vote for that. But it looked like the overall bill was going to pass because, after all, if someone identifies as a lesbian, they're a hardworking gal, right? She's an IT in her company. She's hardworking. She's a good employee. The boss finds out she's a lesbian. Should she be able to be fired just because? And she doesn't even boast about it. She didn't even put gay pride things on her table. Should someone just be able to fire her because of that? If that's actually happening, I would love for you to tell me about this. I would love for you to call in and give me incidents like this with without provocation, without someone doing something that was offensive in the workplace, simply because it was found out that this person privately identified as gay or lesbian, that they were fired. Please call my show and tell me about that in Greater Charlotte, 866-34-TRUTH. The problem is, once you say you can't discriminate based on sexual orientation, we're watching across the country, case after case after case after case. There is now discrimination against Christians because they simply say, I can't participate in saying, I now pronounce you husband and husband or wife and wife.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, so let me tell you what happened with the city council meeting last night, and then I'll take your calls, all right? And I want to play the clips of when I spoke because I was able to record that in a way that you could hear clearly. But I actually recorded the first 50-something. It's not the clearest recording. That's where we got some of those other excerpts. And since it aired on live stream, it'd probably be repeated. I imagine this video of the whole night, which would be instructive. There's a lot to learn from it. Things that were done well, things that weren't done well. And as a follower of Jesus, to everyone in the city that was there, for things that were said in offensive ways and that don't really represent the spirit of the gospel, I do apologize. And for those that stood for truth and spoke truth with love, oh, we can be passionate. We can be forceful. But for those who did, I commend you for doing that. So here's what happened. I had to leave after I spoke, but we were getting text messages keeping us appraised. So the city council was not willing to vote on this with the what we call the bathroom bill provision. So that got struck down. That part got struck down. But this is not just LGB, this is LGBT working as one and sharing the same goals. And Scott Bishop, in his editorial for the bill, said, look, transgender people, that's basically 3 out of 1,000 people. That's a point I made. You're going to make all bathrooms and locker rooms public in Charlotte gender neutral because of the real struggles of 3 people out of 1,000? You're going to impose that on everyone rather than saying, okay, we've got to do what's good for the 997 while being compassionate towards the 3. So they struck down that part of the bill. So then the assumption was, okay, the vote will be 7-4 in favor of the bill without the bathroom provision. With the bathroom provision, it would have been defeated. What happened was 2 of the most liberal city council members could not vote for the bill without the bathroom bill, so shifted their vote to vote against it. But to their shock, they didn't realize that this now made the vote 6-5 against the bill, so the bill was defeated, and that's where it presently stands. My perspective, either way, this is a wake-up call for the church of the city. This was done in a stealth way. I'm not blaming the entire city council, but the way it was introduced and just meeting with attorneys from the Human Rights Campaign, it's outlandish. What major attorneys did they meet with from the other side, who could explain the abuses of this bill, who could explain what's happening nationwide, who could explain why this is a bad bill for the city? Where were those voices? And why wasn't this put up on referendum for the whole city to vote for? And is it even constitutional? Someone said it's not because it goes against state law. So it ended up that the bill was defeated. But whether it was defeated or not, whether it gets reversed at some point or not, to me, it's all the same. The church of the city has to wake up. We need to wake up to prayer. We need to wake up to righteousness. We need to wake up to outreach. We need to wake up to serve the city. Thank God for churches that are doing right, but so many slumbered their way right through this and have no idea what could have been passed right under their noses. We have no excuse for that. We need to come together. We need to pray. And we need to reach out and build relationships with those who think we hate them because we oppose this bill. 866 844-Truth. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. Ola, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you. I was just listening. I've never called in to this station, but I love this station near here in the Texas area. I just think it's just outrageous that we're going so far over from what this country was founded upon. Okay, somebody may call me an old head. Somebody may say to me, well, you know, you just in the ancient times and things have changed. You know, the Bible's, the word does not change. It's the same as it was yesterday, today, and, you know, for future. Now, I work in an environment where, you know, public school, and there is a teacher's bathroom where men and women can use it. Let me just say, it's always eerie for me when I get ready to go and I see a guy coming out. That's just, you know, eerie to me. I have been in situations that I have had to go to the bathroom so badly that I've had to use the man's bathroom, and I have someone to stand there until I come out. And, you know, I rush in, rush out, so on. But if we don't stand up, if we don't stand up for the word and for our children, it's going to be just wild and crazy and out there, and we don't know what we're going to be standing for, what we're going to meet when we go to these public places and so on. I have, you know, gay relatives in my family. I love them. I don't support same-sex marriages. I mean, they love who they love, but I don't support that because my foundation and what I know to be of the word does not, you know, go for that. So I am so ecstatic that that bill did not get passed. That is ridiculous. If they want something like that, let them build a bathroom and say, okay, everybody can use this one, but also have men and women, boys and girls bathroom. I'm for everybody that's fighting against that bill, and I'm so happy that they didn't pass it.
Yeah, and again, it was a shocker the way it came down, the way it wasn't passed, and there'll be pressure for them to reverse it in different ways. But like I say, it's a wake-up call. And you have to realize it's not just a bathroom thing. It's a war on the very concept of men and
Absolutely.
Women, male, female, boys, girls. Absolutely. Hey, thank you for calling and articulating that. I agree with you 100%. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to John in Matthews, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Michael, and please allow me to call you, Michael. I feel...
Please do. Yeah.
I was at the event yesterday and heard you speak and saw you engaging with the folks there, and I was impressed. Liked what you said. A lot of people had great things to say.
Yeah.
But I'd like to focus, if I could, on the city council. First off, they cannot come back to this issue for 6 months. The state law, once you've voted on an issue, you can't resurrect it. But
now, yeah, you can't even do something with parliamentary procedure within a week and reverse it. Is that not true?
Yeah, I don't think so. You have to if you vote on a particular issue, that same issue cannot come up. Now, it's possible that they might redefine it as something else and be mm-hmm. able to vote on it. But
right.
Generally, 6 months is your period of time. Once an initiative has been voted down, you can't come back and debate it again.
Got it.
The other thing, a lot of this stuff, you know, and you well put, rightly and distinctly put it on the lap of that lawyer who entertained only one side of this thing, orchestrated the whole thing, and at the beginning of this, of that meeting, he speaks out and lays it down as if nothing can be done. It's a done deal. And I felt sick. And I'm glad you and others addressed this guy. But this is my point. He and so many other insiders who work for government are typical in this regard. They're all ultra-liberal, progressive, so to speak. They get paid taxpayer money, and the elected officials don't even know what's going on. They show up and they do what they're told. We need people of integrity to change that. Otherwise,
absolutely. It's got to happen. Hey, sorry to cut you off, but city attorney, you did everyone a terrible disservice last night. Terrible disservice.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My name is Michael Brown. I speak to you as a husband, a father, grandfather, minister, professor, radio host. First, thank you for taking so much time and listening so attentively, and I hope really weighing what's being said. First, on a purely legal basis, I was quite shocked by the city attorney's presentation. With all respect, it seemed extraordinarily biased and misleading based on every major legal analysis I've read, especially the reference to biological and anatomical sex, which now become meaningless because the issue is gender identity and gender expression. Outside, I interacted with some on the other side, the pro side of this bill, and I said, what if I am convinced to the core of my being that I am black? Then I was told I am black. And I guess if there was minority housing rights, I'd be allowed to that. I asked another woman, what if I believe I'm a horse? Can I use the stable? Yes, because you're not hurting anyone. We are collaborating with social madness. The transgender individuals I'm interacting with are very gentle souls. I don't think any of them are sexual predators, but you're still imposing the very real struggles of about 3 out of 1,000 people. Can we just take a time out and say, are we actually having a debate about whether to make bathrooms and locker rooms gender neutral? What planet did we just wake up on? According to Dr. Paul McHugh, former psychiatrist-in-chief at Johns Hopkins Hospital, sex change is biologically impossible. People who undergo sex reassignment surgery do not change from men to women or vice versa. Claiming, he says, that this is a civil rights matter is in reality to collaborate with and promote a mental disorder. Are you aware that there's a human rights activist who says that hospitals do a disservice when they say it's a boy or it's a girl? Are you? Please vote no. Thank you.
You heard the bell. That meant we were done. So that was my 2-minute comment to the city council. And my approach was, of course, to thank them for listening, to call the city attorney to account for what I believe was a very deceptive, misleading presentation. Any good attorney on the other side could have shot down what he was saying very easily and exposed the bias. But you think, oh, he hears just the facts. City attorney's just telling us the facts. And I thought rather than try to get a ton of information in, I would just try to get us to think for what are we debating? What are we debating? We're actually debating making bathrooms and locker rooms gender neutral for the struggles of 3 out of 1,000 people. And for those who are transgender advocates, please tell me what the test is. Please tell me what the test is. One individual testifying last night said that she is a transgender woman, so male to female. And she said, we're not the predators. It's the drag queens who are, the men who dress like women and go in the bathroom. They're the predators. This is what she said. Okay, this is what this individual said. How does one distinguish who's the drag queen, who's the real transgender, or aren't? I thought drag queen was a subdivision of transgender to some, just not transsexual. What's the test to determine someone's gender? What if you believe you have multiple genders? What if you believe you have no gender? What is the test? Check out my latest article, please, and I'm going to go right to the phones. I've got a break coming up, so as soon as we come back, straight to the phones. So stay right there. I want to get to all of your calls. A number of you from the greater Charlotte area, I want to get to all of your calls. 866-34-TRUTH. My phone lines are wide open for those who differ with me, for those who are at the meeting or on the other side. I've invited dialogue. Don't trash us and chant and mock and then refuse to dialogue. And don't say that we're using fear tactics when you tell us over and over if we don't pass this bill, the transgenders will kill themselves. Isn't that not a fear tactic? Is that not a fear tactic?
Fire we please, and the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Again, go to my website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on Latest Article. All right? Latest article at AskDrBrown, AskDrBrown.org. And when you click on Latest Article, you'll read what I wrote last night. I was there when the world went mad. All right? You can read it for yourself. Also, if you're unable to get through today, or if you just don't want to come on the air, you can leave up to a three-minute message on our phone lines, and we may play some of them on the air, but we'll hear them. Our staff will listen. 704-498-4688. 704-498-4688. If you'd like to leave a voicemail, up to 3 minutes with a testimony or with feedback to what we're talking about on the air, and we may play some of them on the air at subsequent times. All right, let's go to the phones. We'll start with Sylvia, a little bit outside of Charlotte. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say that this change that they're proposing scares me. I would not want to be sending a little daughter or an older person to the restroom if I knew that it would be like open season for all the perverts to don a wig and come in to the ladies' restroom. I know that I'm very sorry for the folks who have the problem of not knowing their gender and being confused. And I know that there's an underlying spiritual problem there. And I don't think that passing laws to accommodate every weird notion that a person might have is going to treat or help that person. Our society has been affected by the gospel of Christ, and if people don't stand up and stand for the right thing, for morality and the truth in God's word, we just don't know how society can go downhill. If we look back into the, some of the civilizations who have been, before they were affected with the gospel, we can see some of the most bizarre things to ever touch planet Earth.
Yeah, and let's just say now that the sky is really the limit, that again, to quote, as I often have, G.K. Chesterton, who said, don't ever take a fence down until you know the reason it was put up, that it's not just some new construct that there's such a thing as male and female, that there's this new idea that we're foisting on everyone. We're going to lock you into gender identity. No, the new idea is that gender is whatever you think it is. And that you may have no gender or you may have multiple genders. And some people actually feel that they shift their gender expression. I've been reading this. I've been studying this. I've been listening to activists. There is a war on gender. So you do not throw all of society into complete turmoil because some people struggle with these issues. And the vast majority, let's remember, the vast majority are not biologically ambiguous. Yeah, I have compassion for those who are, and we need to do our best to be caring, but you don't turn all of society upside down based on that. There were people, again, who testified last night with tears about being rape victims or being abused by a predator, and to this day, it's hard for them to go in a bathroom just because they're going in there, and there's only one door, you know, someone come in and trap them. And just to say, here, let's say you've got a six-year-old girl who's been abused, okay? And now she's She comes out of the stall in the ladies' room, and next to her comes out of the stall someone that's evidently a man but wearing a dress, and he's not a predator, and he was in the stall privately. But he's there washing his hands next to her as she washes her hands. What about that girl that's traumatized by that? So you have to have certain simple guidelines, and male, female is a simple guideline. And the vast majority of all human beings fit into one of those or the other. And there remains no scientific evidence that there are actually different brains inside of those who identify as transgender, except over the period of time with the plasticity of the brain focusing on certain things will bring about change. I don't say that to hate. I say that to help. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Michelle in Greensboro, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Brown, for taking my call. Years ago, about 20 years ago, I was in the military, and I was actually broken in on and raped. And I survived with my life. I was stabbed, cut, the whole nine yards. I have post-traumatic stress to this day. A lot of things that I do is because of motion. Certain movements frighten me. Now, I have kids. I have male and female children. And I still hold to them when I go to the restroom. I have a younger son. I actually do take in the restroom with me because I'm afraid of him going to the male restroom by himself, knowing that there are predators out there that would take the opportunity, such as this, to do whatever they may want to do. I'm really appalled at this because it does not protect the people, veterans, people that have been traumatized by their past. It does not help them at all. It only puts them in a very awkward situation to where it just inflicts more fear.
It's very true. Again, look, you may have a kid in school who's deaf, and you don't say, okay, all the students can't talk. They all have to use sign language. You try to figure out how to help that child. You also recognize there's a handicap there. There's a problem. So when someone's mind is not in agreement with their biological, anatomical, and chromosomal sex, that's a problem. We want to help them, but we don't turn the rest of the world upside down and remove gender distinctions. And yes, open the door to predators, heterosexual predators or others. Open the door to them. It's foolishness. It really is cultural madness. And may God's grace continue to bring strength and healing in your own life, Michelle. But what you're reminding us of is that there are tons of traumatized people in the world. And if we're not going to factor in every trauma for every individual and try to reconstruct male, female, and basic boundaries of society based on that, it's a hopeless endeavor. But to think that we're going to be compassionate to one person and now traumatize you is cruelty. Thank you for calling. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. And again, I understand that the bathroom part of the bill was the biggest sticking point, but I would have opposed it based on the discrimination language. Why? Because it ends up being used to discriminate against freedom of religion, speech, and conscience. And our nation was founded on those. And America will not be America and cannot be America without those. So Dr. Paul McHugh, greatly hated and despised by transgender activists, considered to be antiquated in his research and beliefs. Dr. Paul McHugh, former psychiatrist-in-chief at Johns Hopkins Hospital, headed up the psychiatric department at the university. He said sex change is biologically impossible. People who undergo sex reassignment surgery do not change from men to women or vice versa. Rather, they become feminized men or masculinized women. claiming that this is a civil rights matter and encouraging surgical intervention is in reality to collaborate with and promote a mental disorder. So again, there were no leading medical experts that were brought in, to my knowledge, correct me if I'm wrong, to dialogue with the city council about this. There were no attorneys who are attorneys for liberty and freedom for all who were brought in, Alliance Defending Freedom, Liberty Council, the various groups within North Carolina, the Values Coalition, and other groups that could readily supply legal counsel to balance out what the city council was doing, to say, bad bill, we don't want to do this because it's going to open up the door to discrimination. No, one-sided. Thankfully, for the moment at least, it went in the right direction for the city.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Let me get to as many calls as I can. We'll start with Sarah. All right, we won't go to Sarah. Let's go to Paige. We won't go to Paige. Look at that. They were there a moment ago. Let's go to Herb in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for calling.
Yes, Dr. Brown. I was at the rally. You speak quite well. But I don't understand why it's pretty much an unknown fact that if you tell a group of children that a lifestyle is good, that more of those children are going to look into that lifestyle and become whatever that is. And why that isn't... Nobody seems to be bringing that up on this bill.
It's an obvious issue, Herb, and thanks for the kind words. In other words, if you make clear to kids that, you know, gender is just really flexible, and you might be a boy in a girl's body, girl in a boy's body, or both, or neither, or whatever, yeah, then if you Look, here's what I realized crystal clear. It's not that I didn't know it, but it was shouting at me last night, that the last generation's radical talking points are this generation's core beliefs, that the last generation's radical propaganda are the mental and emotional strongholds of this younger generation. The passion with which they espoused certain things was shocking and mind-boggling. Well, there's the constant bombardment through the media. There's the, you know, from little children on, that gay is cool and transgender is cool. And it's not said that the people aren't genuine people loved by God. That's not the issue. But the putting forth of an agenda to influence kids. You see, a lot of Christians think, oh, there's a gay school teacher, he must be a sexual predator. And some probably are, and there are also heterosexual school teachers that are sexual predators. That unfortunately runs in sinful human blood. But the real thing is not the sexual predator as the biggest issue. The biggest issue is influencing young minds in negative and destructive ways, influencing young minds in ways that are confusing, when kids have no concept of sexual orientation, no concept of gender distinctions, no concept of even roles. Look, they're little boys. Who do you say, when you grow up, who do you want to marry? I want to marry my mommy. Okay, that kid doesn't understand marriage. That kid doesn't understand sexuality. So now you're going to start telling that little kid things about gender being changeable and gender being whatever you think it is. And if you're a little boy and you like other little boys, maybe you're gay. Yes, kids are impressionable. And many of them are influenced, which is why there's an epidemic in middle school and high school, let alone college, of girls experimenting with bisexuality. After all, Katy Perry kissed a girl and she liked it, so maybe you should try it. I mean, I've heard this across the country, district after district. In rural North Carolina, sir, a pastor told me that this a few years ago, his daughter has a good friend. This girl plays on the softball team, And this is a rural part of North Carolina. She just quit the softball team because she was the only non-lesbian on the team. We know percentage-wise, you know, practicing lesbian is maybe one out of 100 people or a little bit more than that. So how is it? Is all of them on the softball team or just a lot of experimentation? So you're right, it is another issue. What impressionable kids are learning? Hey, teach kids, be nice to everybody. Be nice to bullying is bad. You can teach bullying is bad without saying gay is good. 866-34-TRUTH. CJ in Salt Lake City, Utah, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi. I agree with you about what's being said, but I also don't have a lot of hope that that the laws are going to be on our side. So,
CJ, you're absolutely right. Oh, right now, it's all going the wrong direction. What happened in Charlotte was amazing last night, the way it happened. But unless the church really wakes up in a comprehensive way and reaches the city, at some point that'll change. Supreme Court, 80-90% looks like they're going to vote the wrong way on marriage. But look at the larger picture. Unless Jesus comes first, this will be a failed social experiment. My new book, when it comes out later this year, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, 8 Principles for Long-Term Cultural Change, addresses this. When God laid on my heart to get involved in issues of homosexual activism in 2004, I could see already then it was a lost cause in the natural, that the laws were going to change, that everything was going to go against us in the society, and that it was only out of that that we would see God work. So I hate to see the negative things happen. I hate to see lives hurt and people damaged. I totally agree with your perspective, except
I was going to bring up one thing that maybe they could put into their minds to help out everybody a little bit if they're going to keep pushing it, is to have a third bathroom where those types of people can go or anybody can go.
I'm sorry to just interrupt, but I wanted to affirm and then give you that one extra moment to say that. The problem is, you start a new bit. You got a small business. You got a small restaurant. You don't have the resources to make a third bathroom, and then you're still talking 3 out of 1,000 people. Is that how we do things in our society? We can't. It's not feasible. And what if that doesn't work as an option? I mean, it's an endless number of possibilities. But I appreciate the compassionate solution. All right, friends, we got such a great response to last week's special offer that we're extending it through this Friday. I want to play a clip from the DVD on the fatal flaws of Darwinian evolution. The more people that get this, the more people are going to want to get it out to friends, family members. So let's listen. Clip number 6, Joey.
What I find is that most people, most evolutionists, have never critically examined their own position. It's such a sacred cow, even in their own minds, it's unthinkable to start examining the weaknesses. It's an amazing stronghold.
And so I guess I'm trying to suggest why the creation evolution debate isn't the sort of logical argument that you'll get among scientists when they're discussing, say, the role of sunlight in triggering flowering. But with the creation evolution issue, if evolution is not true, then it means we're created. And if biblical creation is true, then it means it's the God of the Bible to whom we are accountable to. And that, for many people, is a no-go zone.
Exactly. Strongholds, academic, mental, social pressure that stop people from critically examining the issues. But this DVD will expose the fatal flaws of Darwinian evolution. It's 96 minutes, great commentary by scientists, scholars, great graphic illustrations, really, really well done. And we're packaging it together with 2 CD interviews, 45 minutes each, with Dr. Jonathan Sarfati and Dr. Robert Carter. Get it. Get as many copies as you want. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or on the website, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today: for the moment, social and moral sanity prevailed in Charlotte. It will last as the church stands.